Welcome to Two Bits, a podcast about coins and currency, produced by the American Numismatic Association and hosted by Doug Mudd and Mitch Sanders. Doug, we haven't recorded in a while. We've been releasing episodes, but they've been older episodes, so now we're recording anew, also with new audio equipment here in our home studios for both of us. So I hope and expect that will result in some improvement in the quality of the recording. Probably won't influence the quality of the discussion, but you never know. At least the recording will be higher quality.
They can hear all the coughing and direct, perfect sound. But it's good to see you again, Mitch. And we should have a lot of fun with our next series. There should be some good discussions.
Yes, I think so. And we'll, you know, anything that sounds weird, we'll hopefully edit out. But we'll see. We'll see about that. So what we're planning to talk about in this episode, and I expect in more episodes, because it'll be more than would fit in a single episode, is a subject that's important, but also kind of obvious, and maybe so obvious that we don't think about it all the time. And that's the question about what metals are coins made from. I didn't do a comprehensive listing, but I know occasionally there've been coins that were made of something other than metal, or maybe tokens like Notgeld made of porcelain. I think there've been a few other things over time and maybe some experiments, but coins and metal, that's pretty much what goes together. So that's the general subject. And then in just a minute, we can get into exactly how we're going to discuss it. But that's something that is ubiquitous in the hobby. Like, you know, pretty much every coin you encounter is made of some kind of metal. So we want to adopt that perspective and think about the metals that were used in coinage.
Yeah, I think this is a great topic because often people don't really think about the metals that coins are made of, especially nowadays, since originally the metal was very important to the value of the coins. And now in a world where we don't use precious metals for circulating coinage as much, and we use them for bullion coins, well, people think of them as being bullion. And so it's gold or platinum or silver or something like that. Whereas the regular composition of coins isn't really a major topic. It's more about the grade or the value or just the denomination.
Yeah, it's just a practical matter as opposed to something that's really fundamentally relevant in an economic sense, right? Like if a United States dollar coin is made of copper nickel or another composition, really doesn't matter. Whereas in earlier times, gold or silver or how those two interacted was extremely important. Now it's just a production. It's, you know, production of an item. So it needs to be something that people can handle and will withstand the way people use it while also being economical and fairly easy to work with. And sometimes those factors cannot be met. And so certain coins are eliminated, like the Canadian penny, you know, is no longer being made. The value of it was such that it was just not economical to mint it. Arguably the same is true about, or not arguably, but in fact, the same is true about the United States penny and United States nickel even. So the choice has been made nevertheless to continue making them, but that's all a question of the practicalities of production as opposed to more fundamental economic issues about the monetary system.
Right. And that is a major change that's happened over the last basically 60, 70 years. You know, coinage originally came out as a form of metal because metal was something that was durable and also had value. The coins were made specifically with value in mind. So the initial names for coins were based on the weight more than anything else. So you had a stater, a drachma, which is more of, you know, a handful of spits, things like this. And they related to the metal itself and the fact that metal had value either as a decorative element or because it was used as a tool or for weapons, for example, bronze. So It's an interesting change because today metals are primarily selected for their durability, for their suitability in mass production and for longevity, whereas in the ancient days, in part it was because metals, there weren't a lot of other choices that were easily manufactured and worked that could take their place. It goes back to the history of money and what it was made of, a topic we've discussed a little bit in the past. Cows, well, cows are a problem. Can't make change from them. They tend to get sick and die. What do you do with them afterwards? Well, they're useful for a good roast, but may not be good for long-term storage. So
Yeah, and then just thinking about it that way, like what else could even conceivably be an alternative to metal for coinage? Thinking historically, just top of mind, stone. I mean, you can't work with it. I mean, you could like sort of make it smaller, but you can't melt it and work with it the same way you work with metal. So stone money. I mean, there is stone money, right? The giant yap stones, but that's not really circulating medium. What else? Like, I mean, tobacco was used sort of as money, but anything perishable seems
It
iffy.
becomes a problem. It
Yeah, I
becomes a
mean,
problem because you store it and tobacco gets eaten by tobacco worm or other
yeah.
things. You had cowrie shells. Cowrie shells were
Shells, yeah.
useful as a form of money, but they weren't scalable in the sense of they no one, to our knowledge, ever used, tiger cowries versus the Cypria moneta, which is the small little cowries that were used. Because there were so many of them, they were common enough to be used as money, but you couldn't
Yeah.
mark them. And
Right.
an example where you could mark them maybe was were the clam shells that were used during the 1930s during the Depression in the United
Yeah,
States.
I've seen some pictures, but that's, I mean, maybe someone could have figured out a way to print on shells, but it's not easy.
And once you got paper, it was no longer convenient because the shells themselves had such little value, relatively, that
Yeah.
they couldn't be used for anything other than small transactions. So hardly useful for trade when you had to have a shipload of cowrie shells to buy some basic items that you might want for long distance trade. You don't want
Right.
low value.
Right, and any of these things would be irregular, right? So if you want to have a roll or a bag, like a roll of shells doesn't really make sense. You could deal with by weight. I guess that would be the alternative, but that's difficult to maybe it would matter less now, but back when the intrinsic value of the coin made a difference, there would be really no way to assess the weight. I guess in the modern world, you could use some form of plastic or polymer. But I don't know, it wouldn't feel right. I know that's a kind of a vague description, but thinking about a token, like there are plenty of plastic tokens in casinos or parking tokens or within specific environments. That would be something that could be manufactured in a standardized way and impressed with whatever designs one would want. I don't know how well they would wear over time.
Wear
It
would be a
would
major issue,
it might be like coins wear, but they wear gradually, and there's not really a danger of a coin breaking in half in the course of a regular circulation, but a plastic token might not have that same sort of strength.
And
So yeah, metal.
it's interesting because you also get into experiments done by the US Mint at different times, particularly before or during World War II, where in replacing the metal for the cent, they experimented with zinc-plated steel.
Yeah.
That wasn't terribly satisfactory, partly because the steel was relatively hard to work with, but the zinc coating, which is designed to protect the steel, tended to corrode faster than the steel would even. And so the coins ended up very ugly very quickly. Or they've experimented with glass and
Glass,
early
yeah.
forms of plastic like Bakelite. And those weren't
Yeah.
very satisfactory because they tended to break fairly easily. there were other difficulties that made them impractical in the end.
Yeah, those experiments. I know I've seen plastic types or rosin. I don't know the boundary between rosin and plastic, but or resin. Is it rosin or resin? I don't know. I don't usually speak these words,
Yes.
but yeah, something right, something that's durable but and malleable, but not metallic, and that really didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, and aluminum was experimented with, but we'll end up talking about that as we start talking about our metals. And
Yes.
you had a list of metals that you wanted to
So
start with as monetary metals.
let's start there, yeah, with these preliminaries about why metal is important. But in thinking about it and listing, making a listing, I thought it was sort of not entirely clear what we meant when we say metals used in coinage. Like we could mean elements, elements on the periodic table. We could mean alloys that are used. I think what we really mean is a combination of both of the two of those things, as I think about it, because my list is not entirely consistent as to whether it's a chemical element or an alloy. So the general idea that we have is to think about the various metals that have been used in coinage, and then we will each rank order them in terms of, again, a fairly vague characteristic, but how interesting they are. Like the story of the metal in the realm of numismatics, how interesting is it? So, that's something, it's not a formal definition. We'll just think about it in those terms. And it's kind of like a draft, like we would each indicate which one we would pick first, second, third, and so on. And you'll give your first choice and I'll give my first choice. And, we'll explain the reasons why, and we'll see where that goes and see where that leads us and where we agree or disagree. So, all right, do you want to go first? Tell me your most which metal or alloy you would think you consider to be most interesting from a numismatic perspective?
Sure. I mean, this sounds very traditional and not at all unexpected, but gold would be my first choice, partly because of its beauty, partly because the fact that it's the one commonly used metal that doesn't tarnish, doesn't rust, doesn't have any oxidation problems. The only problems it has is when it is alloyed to some extent, which typically it is and has been for much of its history in its usage. But I find gold to be interesting in part because it's one of the first, very first metals that people began to work. One of the things that was very interesting in my researching this was finding out that gold appears in archaeological sites as early as 40,000 years ago in Spanish sites. Now, it's not worked gold. It's gold, what they know of as natural gold, so alluvial gold, that kind of thing. That it wasn't smelted or anything else. They found nuggets and used them as decoration or for one purpose or another. And we're not exactly sure what, but once you get past that, so there's traces of gold from very early human sites, but once you get to worked gold, to gold that has been changed in form in some way, you have to go an extra 35,000 years into the future, basically the end of the fifth millennium BC. So about 4,000 BC, 6,000 years ago, it turns out the Egyptians, before the Pharaonic period, so before the first dynasty, had gold, and they started working with it, not smelting it, but they would find gold in its natural state and then do some basic things to use them in jewelry, more or less as a jewel it would be used. So it's very interesting. I hadn't realized they'd started working with them quite that early. If you move another 1,000 years beyond that, so about 5,000 years ago, the Egyptians began to use gold and mine it. So they were smelting it They were one of the earliest societies with the capability to mobilize huge numbers of people, in part because the River Nile and its cycles allowed them to have enough of a surplus of food to mean that people were available in a way that almost nowhere else in the world, except for a couple places, such as the Fertile Crescent in Mesopotamia, the Indus River Valley in India, and the Yangtze in China. There's very few places that had that kind of fertile and regular growing season that produced enough of a surplus that even with very early agricultural techniques, they were able to produce a surplus of manpower for certain periods of time. And this meant that one of the things, aside from the pyramids, which we all know about, and the massive manpower it took to build those, they actually had massive manpower available to mine. And it was a very physical process, but they had mines with tunnels as long as 4 miles, apparently, from a very early date. And the conditions weren't great and all that, but basically they took the gold out of the veins, which were quartz type veins, which is where you most commonly find the gold deposits, and they would pound them into dust basically, and then grind them down in dust until they got the gold. So they weren't smelting in the way that we think of, where they melted them down and all that stuff. They were literally separating it from its impurities by breaking it down to the point where they could put the dust on boards and run water over it, leaving the gold, and then being able to combine the gold and make larger pieces and jewelry and other things like that out of it, which is very intensive, but they had the manpower, so it was possible for them in a way that wasn't for other societies until after smelting became available.
And then first use of coin, golden coinage was, well, electrum's on the list, so that's kind of a
Yeah.
separate thing, but
Well,
it branched off at some point into silver and then gold in the ancient world, but gold was much as is now much more rarefied.
right. I mean, and it's interesting because gold is one of the is not a terribly rare metal. It's found in all sorts of areas, but it's difficult to get enough of it at one time to work with. So that's why modern techniques are very interesting, because they're able to go into the old mines in all the spoil from the mines, the leftover, and it's with modern techniques, they're able to pull gold that was not possible. It wasn't worth working with 100 years ago or 200 years and more ago, because our modern techniques are capable of pulling the gold, even in minute amounts, out in a workable fashion. But it's interesting because you mentioned the first gold coins. Well, the first use of gold as money, actually, that we are aware of occurred in Egypt as well. Basically, about 4,000 years ago, it's hard to say exactly, but between 3 and 4,000 years ago, they started using ring money. So the gold would come in the form of a ring and be used as set amounts. So they had rings of different sizes, which is interesting because they actually essentially had denominations. They're actually just weights, so they're fixed weight series. We know there's a half and a full. We don't know exactly what the name was, but that was the first use of gold as a monetary item. And it coincides with a time period where, in that same period, they began to use silver and other metals, and they used them as pieces of metal, wire, for example. We find deposits of money in the form of metal, but in wire form, or chunks of metal, sometimes weighed because they correspond to a weight standard of the time, sometimes unweighed. But apparently, they were used as a store of wealth, and they appear to be used in Egyptian pictograms and paintings. in conjunction with scales and being used to weigh things. So they're being used in a monetary form.
Right, and that's distinct from coinage, right? Things, monetary function, like for transactions, the use of gold in a monetary role is different from the use of gold in coinage, because there, coinage is a specific implementation of how metals are used for monetary purposes. But you know, even without coinage, you and I could exchange pieces of gold or pieces of silver. There would be many reasons why that would not be ideal, but it can be monetary, even if it's not coinage.
And yes, it came at least 1,000 years before, and it highlights the practicality of metal in the sense that, unlike many other things that had been used as money, metal was easily divisible and work so that you weren't stuck with a cow or a hide or something else where you divide it and you start destroying its value and its use. With metal, it was easily enough worked where you could cut it into pieces, and if you needed to, melt it down and recombine them if you had to. And that's distinct from what followed the revolution that was the invention of coinage. Another reason why I like it is because, as a monetary metal, it's one of the very first. At first, as you mentioned, in the form of electrum, which was an alloy of silver and gold, which was actually found naturally in Central Asia Minor, in what is today Turkey, but at that time was the Kingdom of Lydia. Lydia invented the first coinages, at least in the West. We're not sure exactly how early the Chinese had coins or things that we could call coins, but about the same time. So coins first appeared in the form of a gold coin in about 560 BC, when the Lydians divided the metal of electrum into silver and gold and produced coins in silver and gold for the first time.
So I read something. I encounter this fact every now and then, and it's like kind of surprising at first, but then less surprising the more you think about it. Which is, I'm gonna give you the quotation. So, or the specific citation. So, all of the gold ever discovered in the world, in the history of the world up until the modern day, would fit in a cube, 75 feet on each side. Which at first doesn't sound like a whole lot. I mean, people have been, there are huge gold mines and people have been mining for centuries, for millennia. And we, as numismatists, we see so many gold coins, not to mention jewelry and other decorations, other artifacts. So at first, to me, that doesn't sound like a whole lot. But then I think about it this way, you know, like even imagine any coin, imagine a $20 gold coin, a double eagle. A million of those coins is 100 by 100 by 100, right? So, like, imagine making a square, 100 double eagles on its side, and then stacking 100 of those. That's a million double eagles. That doesn't take up that much space, you know, just thinking about the magnitude of it, and the volume. So, even with all the many millions of coins made and you know, I don't know what fraction of that has been coinage. That would be interesting. You could probably get an approximation to figure that out. But coinage and jewelry and all other purposes, it still fits into this relatively small space, even after all this time. But it doesn't take much gold to be valuable. And I think that statistic about the 75-foot cube really helps to bring that home.
Absolutely. And when you think about it, in the past, there's a quote that I have. In the past 5 centuries, we have managed to obtain probably no more than 50,000 tons of gold, which sounds like a lot, but considering how dense it is, it means that's really not very much when you compare it to any of the other metals. Silver is vastly greater, copper, much, much more of it. And this cube that you mentioned, it's not that much, and yet you think about how much influence, and this is part of why I chose gold. how much influence gold has had over human activity ever since it was discovered, you know, from the harnessing of vast numbers of people to mine it in ancient Egypt, to the fact that people were willing to travel over vast distances, essentially close to equivalent to the idea of traveling to Mars today. I mean, when it took, you know, a year and a half or more sometimes to circumnavigate the globe,
yeah,
or just getting across the Atlantic in the 15th century of in the 16th century, where it could take anywhere from 3 months to 6 months to go one way with no communication at all. And yet people were willing to do it despite diseases, despite the possibility of starvation, death by storm, death by angry natives if you try to take their gold from them.
Right.
People were willing to do this. And that is part of the reason why I think gold is very important in this consideration, in that it has been a great motivator for innovation and exploration in a way that almost nothing else has historically, certainly not as consistently.
Right. And it's part of how we think about things, part of language, right? Something's as good as gold, or something that we really prize highly, or we consider, or sets a standard. We say this is the gold standard of whatever, you know, or gold medal in the Olympics. You know, the phrase "you're golden," like this, just it comes up all the time, and in ways that we don't always think about their origin, but it goes back to the importance of gold. Gold coins have been made throughout history, including to the present day, but only for monetary purposes through the 1930s, and now it's been more of bullion coins for sale to collectors and investors, or sometimes as part of the backing of currency, but now just something that people and governments have, right? Like the gold in Fort Knox, it's valuable, but it's not something, it's not part of our monetary system, you know, at all, you know, and whereas at one time that was the core of the monetary system. So yes, it's whatever happens with its use as money, and that's been extensive, it's always a special material. So all of that, like I agree with all the interesting things about gold, but it wasn't my number one choice. And in part, I wanted to, you know, do things a little bit maybe outside the ordinary. I think gold is a very natural choice for all the reasons that we talked about. When I was thinking about what I would select as the most interesting numismatic metal, it's different. Like, what is the most important numismatic metal? I think that's gold, that's for sure. But if I think about what is most interesting in terms of like the hobby and collecting, gold, again, very virtuous, and I will mention it very soon on my list, but the one metal that I would pick as the most interesting, thinking about its history, its place in numismatics, and also in the world and in society, I'll make the case for silver as the most interesting coinage metal, in part because gold is like so important that it's been a constant, and I think that's really meaningful. Like, people, governments and economies, like, they've always wanted to use gold. Like, once gold became a monetary medium in ancient times, maybe not ancient Greece, because that was mostly silver just based on what was available. There was some gold coinage. But, you know, like, from Roman times on, gold was the thing. Like, everybody wanted gold and would use it whenever they could. Like, I remember reading a book a long time ago, and it's like a 19th century book about bimetallism as a monetary system, and it made this point. Like, if a country can get enough gold for its monetary system, they will want to use gold. But then so many interesting things happened when places couldn't do that. Like, even just thinking about in the modern era, you know, like in the Spanish world, all the gold mines, or silver mines in Mexico and in Peru, you know, like there was, the whole Spanish Empire was like a way to transfer bullion from the Americas to Spain. And so you have all these coins as a result. And then thinking about in the American context, when the country was founded, and they were starting a monetary system. There just wasn't that much metallic money around, kind of by design in the British system. So the new government really had to take whatever they could get, and that meant gold, that was part of the system, but also silver, kind of on an equal footing in terms of what could be coined and free coinage. And then when you start to trace the implications of that from the origin of the mint in 1792, through pretty much the entire 19th century, it was like, what was the place of silver in the monetary system? That was the key question. And so many things that we see, like how the gold rush changed coinage and how the weight of silver had to be reduced in order to keep some silver in the system, or all the silver dollars produced as part of the battle over free silver. And so instead of adopting free coinage of silver, we had the Morgan dollar as kind of a compromise. So we have all these hundreds of millions of dollars that were coined. And then, like how to navigate the desire on one hand to have small coins that had intrinsic value equal to their face value, which was seen as virtuous, with on the other side of that coin, so to speak, that just made it very difficult to have gold and silver circulating at the same time. You would usually have one or the other, depending on how things looked in terms of the market price or the ratio of their values at the mint. And then, moving into the 20th century, gold coinage lasted into the 20th century for a while, and silver coinage, didn't last the entire century or even close, but it did last longer. So thinking about it, like from that broader economic perspective, and then also thinking about like my coin collection, there's a bit of gold, but there's a lot of silver, and I think that's probably a fairly common story. So I can't take anything away from gold as an important and an interesting coinage metal, but I think in terms of the like if I were gonna make a movie about a coinage metal, I think I would choose to make it about silver instead of gold because of all these interesting twists and turns along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. There's silver has, I mean, it's interesting because it's arguably the more important between the two, because it's had a larger role in the daily lives of more people throughout history, and in many ways, in the larger sense of the economic role it's played, it's been a huge element, and partly it's because it is much more common. And it's for the Greeks, for example, it was the standard metal that they used in the ancient Greek period. That is the first coinage that the Greeks used, and they were the ones who really developed coinage into what we know of today. A design on both sides, used to disseminate messages beyond just who issued it and all that. They developed denominations that were on the coinage, all of these things, and that was all in silver. It allowed for a monetary system that could be fully monetized because there was enough silver so that everybody could have access to it. And we know this because of things like the tiniest of the silver coins were minute specks, basically. And I mean, this is true of the gold as well, but the gold, the value of those tiny specks of gold was still much more than the daily wage of a person, whereas the tiny specks of silver were something that would be used to buy a meal or a drink or something like that, as opposed to, oh, this is 2 days' worth of work or a full day's worth of work or a month's worth of work for larger coins. So I would agree that it's a very important part. It's not my first because of the reasons stated, but it's interesting because of its association with gold over time. It has been a major element in conjunction with gold almost from the very start.
One thing I appreciate about silver is that it reacts to its environment as a metal, like in a way that gold doesn't. I mean, that's the point of gold, is that it doesn't tarnish. You can see gold coins that have been underwater for 200 years, and you pull them out and you get the gunk off, and it's like they were made yesterday. Gold doesn't do that. I mean, a little bit, mostly because there's, like we talked about, a gold coin is not pure gold. It's gold alloyed with something, typically copper, so the copper may tone. But silver is very reactive, and that's why you see so many coins with toning. Some, it's not all beautiful, but much of it is, and that's something that is, like most metals do tone some more than others. Gold really not very much, but copper does, and I guess nickel not really, but silver's like the gold standard for toning on coins. And it's so such wide variety, and I've enjoyed over the years looking for really nice examples of toning. And so that's something that silver offers from a numismatic perspective, independently of its historical role, that to me is really valuable. And I think a lot of other people, tastes vary. Some people prefer their coins untoned, but I think a lot of people prefer, something nice and colorful that emerges on coins. And sometimes I was showing a tone coin to someone, a friend, a non-collector, and like it wasn't obvious that it was part of the metal, versus something that had been applied separately. Like it wasn't
Sure, it
painted
wasn't
on, or
colorized or
yeah, it
something.
wasn't done in that way. It was just that's what the outer layer of the silver coin looked like. That was the true surface of the coin.
Yeah,
So that wasn't
it's.
obvious, but it's, yeah, just so much beautiful coloration is out there, and I really appreciate that. Yeah, so I picked silver, but gold is second on my list. I think we've probably said everything there is to say about both gold and silver. Was silver number two on your list, or did you have another?
Actually, silver was number four on my list. Number
Wow, okay.
two goes to that question we had originally of alloys. Bronze would be my number two. But that'll have to wait for another time. Yeah, thank you everyone for listening to this episode of Two Bits. I hope you'll be back for the follow-on, and we'll go from there with an interesting story of yet more metals and their relationship to coinage.